Welcome to Leadership and Life Chat with your hosts, me, Becky Ames.
And me, Mark Curtis. In each episode, we'll be illustrating how success in leadership is inextricably linked with success in life.
Whether it's leadership in business, society, family or friends, we're all leaders.
Using our experiences and a range of expert guests, we'll share secrets to boosting your health, wealth and self.
So let's get on with the show. Today, we are very pleased to welcome as our guest, Brenda Harrington, who is joining us from the United States. Brenda is the founder of Adaptive Leadership Strategies, and she is an executive coach helping clients refine their leadership competencies and professional habits. So really how they can have the greatest possible impact. She is also the author of Access Denied, Addressing Workplace Disparities and Discrimination, a book which she started writing in early 2020, and we are really interested to find out more about. So Brenda, welcome to our show. We're so pleased that you've joined us today. So much we want to talk about. But first of all, just as an intro for the listeners, could you give us a bit of background about you, your story, and what you're all about, please?
Certainly. Well, thank you, first of all, for having me. I'm really excited to talk with you both today. I will start my story at about the 30-year mark of my career in private industry. I had held a number of positions from first-level manager and at the time was a senior executive in a real estate and consulting firm. This coincided with the financial crisis, if you will, 2007-2008. And we were in the middle of a very challenging acquisition, and people were not in a good place. And that is when I really, I don't want to say discovered, but really realized the value of coaching, personal development, and things like that. And it was, for me, it was like a moth to a flame. It saved me during that time. And it was through that experience that I decided that I wanted to do more of it. And that's when I started thinking about the development of a practice. And then fast forward about 2.5 to 3 years later, I founded Adaptive Leadership Strategies. So we're now 12 years in, and I'm really excited about the learning space that we've created for leaders and emerging leaders to become the best version of themselves.
So it was from a need that you benefited from some coaching yourself that you then realized that was something you really wanted to explore further and ended up coaching others.
Yes, coaching in part, but really casting a wider net when you talk about coaching and professional development and just really learning and development in a way that focuses on something other than your core and technical competencies.
Yes.
It really is what saved many of the people in that experience, I will say. Yes. And I realized that at that point in time, not dissimilar to some of the things that we're experiencing now for different reasons, but I realized that at that time, the most important thing was the people. I needed to prioritize the people over the work.
Yeah. I mean, that's such a core theme of everything that certainly Mark and I experience. And we both have coaches as well. So just sort of taking it a step back, what would you say to someone about why you think it's so important to have a coach?
We all need someone to hold a mirror up for us, to hold us accountable, to call attention to the things that we cannot see in ourselves, the good and the challenging. I try not to use words like weaknesses and you know, bad and things like that, because I don't feel that they're energizing. But this is all about development and how we can do better and how we can grow and improve. And we can't do that work alone.
Yeah, I mean, it never fails to amaze me how many business leaders don't have a coach. It still seems to be, the people I talk to, it's a minority position. You know, it's why everyone wouldn't have a coach, I don't get, you know, because as you say, there's no harm in it. It's a safe environment. I think that's the thing I love about my business coach. It's a very safe, trusted environment. And he can say, he knows he has permission to really challenge me strongly on areas. And I respect him for it because I respect the individual who I've chosen as my coach. So I think in some ways, it would be interesting to maybe hear about how you go about selecting your clients as well, because it has to be a two-way relationship, doesn't it? It's not a case of, well, everyone who comes to you, you're going to take on as a client. How does that work for you, Brenda?
It absolutely has to be two-way. And I want to touch on something that you said, Mark, because I don't think people understand coaching. People think that they're being called to the principal's office or that it's something punitive. And unfortunately, some organizations do use coaching in that way almost as a last resort. And I really try to avoid even those conversations because it really is a gift. It's developmental and it's all about growth. And so when you talk about selecting clients, you know, we conduct what we call chemistry calls to see if there's rapport and to see to what extent, you know, we have the same expectations. And there's got to be mutual respect. And the client has got to be willing to do the work. It cannot be more important to me than it is to the client. Mm-hmm. And so, for example, if I find that I'm having to chase someone, if I'm always having to say, Mark, you know, when do you want to schedule the next session? Or I haven't heard from you in a month. You know, when would you like to? Then I respectfully, you know, try to find an alternative or maybe talk about terminating the agreement.
Yeah, it can't be hard work, can it, on either side in that respect? And it's got to be, certainly we in our roles, we coach people. And as I say, we both have coaches. And it's for me as well, it's about having that time out of your day to day role where you really commit to yourself and your learning and your development, as you say. And if it's in the diary, it happens. It's not something that I bump at all. And I think it's a really positive message to other people as well to see that you're investing in yourself in that way. It's such a valuable use of time, isn't it?
Yeah, I think people maybe still look at it as almost a sign of weakness if they have to have a coach where, you know, I know Brenda from listening to another podcast you've been on, one of the words you choose to describe yourself is curious. And I get that as well. I am that annoying 5-year-old, as Becky will probably agree with. I just love asking questions. I want to know how stuff works, you know. So why is that then, you know? And for me, I realise that I don't know very much about anything in the scheme of the world, and having a coach to say, well, why is that then? How could I do it different? What do other people do? How do successful people do this? You know, really challenging the coach to help me understand more it's not a sign of weakness. Actually, I'd like to think it's a real sign of strength that I'm prepared to say, do you know what? I don't know that much about anything in the scheme of the world. And the only way I'm going to find out is by talking to people who've got a different experience bank, greater, wider knowledge than what I have.
Now more than ever, Mark, because we are in such uncharted territory. And even for those who think that they've seen it all before, they've done it before, this is different. And so I think that for people who are setting curiosity aside, who are averse to innovative thinking and creativity, they're creating their own blind spots. So now more than ever, those things are very important.
And you're saying now more than ever, so I'm taking that to mean, you know, since the pandemic and different ways of working, different ways of thinking. What are you seeing in that area with the individuals that you coach or people coming to you now wanting coaching? There's been a real shift in attitudes, do you think?
Considerable shift. You know, we've all had the question, whether explicitly or implicitly, you know, what's in it for me? What am I getting out of this? But right now, that leads the discussion. And I think that the last 3 years have really forced so many people to assess and reevaluate their lives, both professionally and personally, how they're spending their time, and really what their why is.
Yeah.
And so people are really looking to have conversations that are much broader than how do I become a better marketing executive or how do I, you know, get to the next promotion. They really are trying to more closely align, you know, their purpose and their values with their work.
Yeah. And do you think that's because we all had some time to stop in a way, didn't we? And just be. I know it's forced upon us, obviously, but we had that space, perhaps. The world did grind to a bit of a halt for some time and people definitely reassessed, didn't they?
They had to reassess. And, you know, when we came to that full stop around the world, you know, people found, I don't know what to do. Yeah. I'm not traveling. I'm not doing this. What am I supposed to do with myself? So, you know, it left a lot of time to think, for one. Unfortunately, there are many people who experience terrible, profound loss, yeah. you know, with people that were impacted directly by COVID, especially in the early days before we had vaccines and interventions and things like that. And then also the employer-employee experience, you know, the psychological contract that exists between employers and employees. And what is reasonable for me to expect of you in exchange for the services that I provide? And I think that during that time, especially at the beginning, a lot of people learned hard lessons about how they were viewed by their organizations and you know what the underlying culture was and it was not always favorable.
That's interesting, isn't it? I think people definitely reassess, but also, like you say, had to rethink about what their relationship with their employer, their work, their business, whatever it might be, was, and also exactly what you say about purpose, and you know what gets me out of bed in the morning, what is it that I want to be doing that's going to fulfill me. And I know you talk about in other podcasts and in your book about being stewards of our own lives, and how important that is, that we recognize that we have choice and that we need to exercise that choice.
You know, it's about not only what your purpose is and what gets you out of bed, but what is a derailer for you. And sometimes we don't always know what it is, but we know what it is not. And I think that when you talk about choice, I think it's so important for people to be willing to give themselves space. And when I say that, I mean being willing to move away from or address those things that either make them uncomfortable or don't suit them. And in coaching, we talk about what no longer serves you, right? Mm-hmm. It's really important to be able to take those steps. Unfortunately, we have traditionally, in an employer-employee relationship in particular, we've become very reliant on organizations to provide us with development opportunities. And if they're not employee-related or employee-related or employer-based, then we don't take it up on our own. And I think we've all got to assume responsibility for our own professional development at some level.
Yeah, I think we've seen that certainly, haven't we, Mark?
Yeah, and Gina, that just resonates so much with me, because I'm an inquisitive, curious person. I've always wanted to know stuff. So I've not waited for, you know, I've been at Larkin Gown since 1997, you know, as a 22 or whatever I was at the time when I joined Larkins. And I was put on a personal development course at the age of 25. I just qualified as an accountant, and the firm went away from just traditional technical training and started to do personal development. And I was one of the pilot group who went through it. And it was just absolutely eye-opening for me. And it just really kind of opened my eyes to wanting to become a better version of myself every day, or at least attempt to. I think I slip back occasionally. But what I've seen as I've gone through my career is people saying almost like, oh, I wish I knew some of the stuff you knew, Mark. And I'm like, well, you can just kind of open your eyes, open your ears, listen to podcasts, read books, just randomly go and get a book out of a self-help section or a, you know, whatever it might be. Don't go out specifically to get a book. Just buy some random books, you know, just open your mind and explore it. And they still kind of come back and go, well, maybe could you send me on a course for this? You know, and it's almost like going to the doctors and saying, give us a pill and everything will be okay. I've also taken a more holistic approach, and I encourage the people around me to just, you know, to do this. It's not about business. It's about investing in yourself. And you never know when that's going to pay dividends. So I just love if people chose to invest a little bit of that time they've got in just opening their mind and expanding it. And you know, before we recorded the podcast today, I was just saying to Becky and Lizzie, I found this new podcast. It's called Philosophize This, with a guy called Stephen West. No idea who he is, but I've always been quite interested in philosophy. Not that I've ever looked into it, but I'm now listening. I've got 179 podcasts to listen to, you know, so it's like, it's just that inquisitive mind. I just want to explore stuff. And I just love more of the people around me in the business to do the same and take it off, not just rely on the business, as you're saying there, Brenda.
Yeah. What's interesting to me is that if a person sees a vacation or recreation experience that interests them, or, you know, certainly some kind of object or accessory that supports a hobby, there's usually little reservation about investing in it. But when you talk about investing in themselves, then, oh my goodness, you know, the tuition is X, or it's so expensive and it'll take so much time. So
yeah,
we've got to shift our way of thinking.
And there's also, for me, when I talk to members of my team about coaching, it's sort of like, you know, they want a beginning and an end to it as well. You know, it's a package. And I'm like, it's kind of a continuous thing. And once you start, chances are you're going to want to keep going anyway. But we are a firm of accountants, Brenda. So, you know, we can be quite methodical and like an answer and it's done, it's complete.
I think, though, at some point, and I say to people, I'm not an advocate of coaching for life. No. You know, as you encounter different transitions and things like that, certainly it's appropriate to work with someone. But I hear about these open-ended agreements, and sometimes that concerns me a little, quite frankly, because at some point you've got to be able to take wings and fly. Right.
Yeah.
And so I think there's got to be a balance.
Absolutely. And it's exactly like you say, for different stages of your life, a different style, a different person might be right for you as well, isn't it? And it's being open to that one person isn't going to be the solution for everything. And it's got to be a two-way thing. There's got to be a rapport, a trust, a respect. And finding that individual might not happen instantly. It can be a little bit of try and see, can't it? I've certainly taken a little while to find the coach that I clicked with. But it's about investing the time again.
Yes, it's great if you have the opportunity, and I'll say the luxury of doing that. Because, you know, I mentioned that I used the term chemistry call earlier. Sometimes it takes a little bit longer. Sometimes it takes a session or two to really determine whether or not it's going to work longer term. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But you said something, Becky, that reminds me of something that I talk a lot about in the book. And that's really, and from the standpoint of mentorship, you know, I talk about the importance of having not just a mentor, but really seating your own board of advisors, right? Because one person, you can't be all things to all people, and you need different perspectives and voices. And what you really need are people who are going to tell you the truth, even when you don't want to hear it, right? So I think it's important to surround yourself with people that you can have honest conversations with.
Yeah, really important. I talk to people about you need different people for different things, and both, you know, relevant to the roles that we do, but also for when you need a bit more of a kick, maybe a bit more of a push, a bit more of a shove, really being held to account. And it's about recognizing that in yourself as well, isn't it? What you need. You need to understand that aspect of things.
Self-awareness.
Absolutely.
Self-awareness.
Yeah, but it's interesting, isn't it? Yeah. Because that almost brings us into the realms of, in inverted commas, difficult conversations. Delivering an honest message doesn't have to be nasty, does it? I think that's the thing that I try and get across to my team. You know, if you're delivering a difficult message or an unpopular message and you think you're going to be nasty to someone, then you probably need to take a long, hard look in the mirror about your communication style. You know, you can deliver a difficult message in a compassionate way to someone still. And I think that's maybe why people shy away from those difficult conversations, whether it be in unofficial coaching in business or maybe even some official coaches out there, because it's about the delivery of the message, isn't it? It's about communication skills.
In part. But I also believe it's about setting and managing expectations. Mm. And when I, you know, for example, when I think about conflict, right, and we talk about conflict resolution, and of course, including difficult conversations, if you ask five people what they consider a difficult conversation or what they consider a manner of conflict, you can get five distinctly different answers. Everything from he uses a pen and I use a pencil to, you know, something that's more substantive. And so I think it's very important to set the tone, to say, you know, differences of opinion, different points of view are healthy and they're encouraged. You know, that's where some of the best ideas come from. And it's all right not to agree every day, you know, and to share your perspectives and set the tone. Because I would venture to guess that many people think that any form of disagreement is a problem, and it's not. It's a gift.
Yeah. And it's funny, I've just been reading a book where they gave the example of that with John F. Kennedy during the Cuban Missile Crisis, where he came up with something, everyone agreed with him, and it nearly led to someone pressing the button. And he challenged everyone and said, come on, look, you know, just because I say something, you don't have to agree. And I think he changed the way that the government actually worked and the inner advisor circle worked off the back of that. You know, so it just shows, doesn't it, that you can end up, if you're not careful, with people who, you know, are frightened for whatever reason to be honest about things. And it's just creating the environment where they can. And I've got a quote up on my notice board back in the office where it was one of the Second World War American generals where I think he said something like, if everyone's thinking the same, then someone ain't thinking, you know. And it's just like, you know, we all need to engage our brains and use them for what they're there for, you know, when we're in a group of people.
You don't want groupthink. You don't want groupthink. And that's why psychological safety is so important, right? Because in order to get people to come forward and share openly and honestly, they've got to know that that will be well received, and that it's a safe space, that they're not going to be indicted for, you know, expressing their point of view.
So, Brenda, you talked about how we've seen certainly changes in attitudes in the workplace in recent years. Have you seen a change in the demographic of the people that are approaching you wanting coaching, and also how they want to receive that coaching?
I don't know that there's been an individual shift in the demographic. What I mean by that is I work primarily with organizations. And so, you know, the people that I see being selected for coaching through their sponsors, probably generally in the, you know, 35 to 50, 55 range, in some cases, a little bit, you know, more senior than that. But I think that the common thread is around succession and preparation, more so than the demographic. And those just happen to be the people who are in that phase of that stage of their career. They're either transitioning or preparing to transition from being an individual contributor or a subject matter expert to leading a team or leading people, or they're moving into a larger role, a larger space. And I think that most organizations are investing in people, you know, with whom they see, in whom they see, I'll say, promise, and who are also demonstrating a desire to do some of the work and invest in themselves.
Definitely. I think we certainly see that in our business and with our clients as well, and about how we need to think differently in what we're offering our people as well, these opportunities, if we want them to remain, because people have assessed what they want out of their work lives, haven't they? And, you know, if we want them to stay and be motivated in the role, then absolutely we want them to be the best that they can be.
No question. And I always encourage organizational clients, in addition to coaching, to augment those one-on-one conversations with some type of cohort or group learning. It is invaluable to sit and have conversations with your peers, even to develop peer coaching or peer learning circles, you know, so that you just have an opportunity to share and exchange information. We've become so isolated with technology and this digital space that we live in with our devices. And we've lost a social component that is really, really important. And so I really strive to bring people together in some way to share in the learning experience.
Yeah. That's really interesting, because often if we think about a coach, we think of someone who's perhaps older than us or gained more experience than us and you know, can really share their wisdom. Your peers can be so valuable in that respect as well, can't they, to bring different perspectives and share experiences that you're going through at the same time.
You know, our individual personalities and life experience, diversity and culture, you know, we just have different ways of thinking about things and approaching things. And so it helps on so many levels to come together.
Yeah, I'd read somewhere once where somebody said basically getting a coach is a shortcut to success, I think was the way they described it, which is, you know, don't go through all of the mistakes. Look at somebody who's achieved what you perceive you want to achieve in life, in career, whatever it might be, and use them so you can learn from the mistakes they made and potentially shortcut your way to success. Is that a fair assessment, do you think? Or how would you look at it in a different way to that?
I think you just described a mentor more than a coach.
Okay.
Okay. Because one of the most important things with coaching is for the coach not to be in his or her own story. And that can be difficult because many times, you know, you and I could be having a conversation, Mark, and you say something that just resonates with me so much based on an experience that I had. Okay. And it would be, as your coach, it would be inappropriate for me to weigh in and say, you know, that happened to me and here's a da 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 da. Really, this is about you. This is your space as the client to explore. Now, I can ask you questions and probe. That's why I'm there, to really help you get to the best outcome for you. And we can co-create behavioral practices and ways to begin to develop, for you to begin to develop new habits. But I need to keep my story out of it.
Yeah, that's really interesting because I think very often the terms coach and mentor get used interchangeably. And maybe, you know, I think you've started to explain the difference there, but maybe for the listeners, it would just be worth perhaps you just giving a quick kind of 60 seconds on, well, what is the difference between a coach and mentor? Because I think there is perhaps a lot of confusion out there still between what the two are.
Certainly. A coach is someone that you partner with to really develop new habits. That's the beginning and the end. That's the short version. But it's someone that you share a creative, confidential space with to learn as much as you can about yourself, your blind spots, identify your strengths, cultivate those strengths, and really create or chart a course for the way forward. It's very different from, confused less with mentoring and more with counseling or therapy. And it's none of those things. And it's certainly not training.
Yeah.
Because as coaches, we're not here to tell you what to do or how to do it. Okay. We're really here to help you create the way forward that you can embody that best suits who you are and is a reflection of your personality, your values, and the things that you want.
Yeah. Thank you. I think that was worth clearing up because there's always a lot of confusion around that area. And, I think because I like to talk and share stories, I think I'd make a far better mentor than a coach.
You'd learn. You know, it's interesting that you say that. I reflect on, and I would encourage anyone to visit the website for the International Coaching Federation. You know, that's kind of our governing entity, if you will, and learn as much as you can about coaching. But when I recall the days that I was in coaching certification, I went through the leadership coaching program at Georgetown University in Washington, D.C. And when I left that program, I thought, I'll never be able to make another statement for the rest of my life because we were trained so well to ask powerful questions, right? And a lot of it is about that probing and asking the right questions and really, you know, being in a very close and nurturing space with the client, deep listening, you know, to really understand what questions will move the person to the next level. And that's really what coaching is about.
So just on that point, listening, we've actually done a podcast in the past on the five levels of listening and how, you know, some tips on how you can improve your listening. What did you do to become a better listener? Because I think as leaders, all of us probably without exception almost could benefit by improving our listening skills.
There are lots of exercises to help with that. I think that many of us are in the space of listening politely to wait for the other person to stop speaking so that we can say what we want to say next. And we're really not connecting to what the person is saying or the intention of the message. We're just waiting for silence so that we can transition. And if you practice really just when you think about mindfulness, focusing on one thing at a time, and if you can just really sit and practice focusing on just one thing at a time for a series of intervals, maybe starting 30 seconds at a time, and then 60 seconds and getting yourself up to 3 to 5 minutes. It's very difficult, but you begin to realize all of the things that you've been missing, that you haven't noticed, that you haven't been paying attention to. And that's one of the more benign ways, I'll say, of really practicing deep listening skills. But it is just really being intentional about not thinking about anything but what the other person is saying. And if you're focusing on an object in this exercise, just thinking about the object and exploring the object.
Yeah, thank you.
That's a challenge for a lot of people, isn't it? Particularly now.
For everybody.
We're so easily distracted. We've got such a short attention span. And particularly, this is a generalization, but you know, we see this in our younger people as they're coming into the workplace, that they're constantly distracted by something and losing their focus. And I think as they go through their careers, they will need to really practice these skills, as probably most people do. But I think they're starting from a slight disadvantage in that respect, in terms of just what they've been used to.
I would agree with that. And the fact that, you know, multitasking at some point became some type of a rite of passage. How many plates can you keep spinning at the same time? And we have much more research now that shows, you know, that provides evidence that it's counterproductive, right? Because you can't do 10 things well. Most people cannot. And so we really have got to come away from that. And that's why you're hearing so much more now about meditation and mindfulness and all of these things, because we weren't built to juggle so many meaningful things at once.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is something we talk about a lot, isn't it, Mark, in terms of our teams getting something done, getting the most important task done, rather than trying to do everything at the same time.
Yeah.
And so you touched on something really interesting there, getting the most important thing done. And when I think about some of the challenges many of my clients face, it's really identifying what that most important thing is. Is it the thing that I can accomplish the fastest so that I can check the box and say I've gotten something done? Or is it the thing that adds the most value, that has the most relevance with regard to my strategic objective or the overall organization's strategic objective? And so there's really a struggle when it comes to setting the right priorities or setting the priority of the day, because they might not be the same Wednesday as they were Tuesday. So.
Mm. Yeah. And we've done a big piece on that recently, haven't we, Becky? Someone recommended an audiobook called 15 Secrets of the Successful People Around Time Management, or something like that. A guy called Kevin Cruz.
Mm-hmm.
And I listened to the book and got the infographic and I thought, wow. And we did a big piece of work with the team that Becky and I are partners in. And it was revolutionary for some people, wasn't it? In terms of,
yeah,
you know, how they identify their most important task of the day, you know, and just things like that. Little things made a massive difference in terms of their, not just their productivity, because it's not just about what's in it for us, but for their almost, it just helped them clear their heads a little bit and get a little bit more order about what was going on between their ears as well, which was beneficial for them as well.
Hugely beneficial, because what ends up happening is you have all of this. I said, you have this traffic jam in your head, right? I didn't do this. I didn't get to that. I still have to do this. And, you know, you ask the question, what keeps you up at night, right? Or why can't I go to sleep? It's because you've got all this stuff, all these unresolved questions and unfinished business, if you will. And by really taking time to put that in order, by setting the right priorities and creating more clarity, you know, it has universal benefits, both professionally and personally.
Yeah. And because there used to be the old thing, didn't there, which is keep a pen and pad beside your bed. So if you do wake up with something, write it down so you can get back to sleep. And one of my friends is, he's a butcher and he's got a butcher's shop and he comes up with very creative sausage recipes. And I don't know if this is true, but someone said to me once that he was so creative around the different sausage recipes he could come up with. He used to keep a pen and pad beside his bed. So when he woke up in the night with a new recipe, he'd scribble it down so you could go back to sleep again. I don't know if it's true, but there you go. A bit of a random story.
Very beneficial. No, it's true. Very beneficial to do that. Yeah.
So, Brenda, you were saying that that's a common theme you see with the people you're working with, is that they need to understand what their most important task is. What other themes are you seeing coming through at the moment? And have they shifted as well? We said attitudes have shifted. Have the issues shifted as well that people are needing to resolve?
One of the big things is and has always been delegation and, you know, an ability to let go in a meaningful way, you know, not just hand off something off to someone else to get it off of your plate, but hand it off in a way it's where it should be in the organization, number one. And number two, that it provides a growth and development opportunity for the person taking it on. You know, I find that that is a huge question for many people. And part of that, it goes back to what I talked about with regard to setting expectations. You know, we cannot expect everyone to see things exactly as we see them. And you've got to leave space for other people to create their own methods and things like that, as long as they're able to get to the desired outcome. And there's a lot of discomfort around that, a lot of discomfort around it. And the other thing is, this varies a bit based on discipline. And with all due respect, you know, for people who are in accounting and finance, for scientists, for IT people who are, I'll say, left brain dominant, who rely on structure and linear processes to do things, when they are trying to navigate the political landscape in an organization and really become more effective as leaders of people, they struggle. And so we really have to do a lot more, I'll just say here, right brain work, right? Really getting them to a place where they can think more creatively and helping them to become more comfortable in ambiguous spaces. Because when we're dealing with people, you know, there's no playbook. There's no playbook.
No, absolutely. I'd certainly appreciate what you're saying there, because we do work in a very structured profession, and a lot of the skills that you need certainly doing what we do are analytical and, you know, processes and getting to the right answer. And I think then when we ask people in more senior roles to develop people and nurture and lead, it can be really, really challenging for them. And I've certainly seen that when we're looking at recruiting now, we're looking for different skill sets, because we need far more of that personal aspect, the empathy, the emotional intelligence, and engaging with our clients as well. So important. Anyone who says that they've dreamt of being an accountant since they were five, I'm a bit worried about, because they possibly haven't got those skills that we need.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
But it's interesting, isn't it? Because I was listening to another podcast where they were talking around the way to use left and right brain and the benefits. And they were saying very much around, you know, you should practice music, art, poetry, which are more kind of right brain. But they also, there's a central bit as well, which keeps the two hemispheres really working hard together. And I think the example they were given was actually I think it was the US government who looked at China and said, all of the Chinese students seem to be really good at maths, therefore we need to major on maths in the US. And they actually missed the point, which is actually a lot of the mathematicians coming out of China are also almost virtuoso violinists or pianists, because they're doing both left and right brain to almost become a polymath, I guess you would kind of to maybe use a term around it. And maybe we should encourage that. Perhaps, Becky, we should introduce poetry writing sessions at lunchtimes because it would really free up people's brains to kind of look at things differently.
What people miss is, and what you're saying, Mark, is that the development of that right hemisphere amplifies what you're able to do with those hard skills that left brain dominance. And any, you know, poetry, playing music, drawing, painting, there's a visual goal setting exercise that I engage clients in often. It was developed by a coach by the name of, I don't want to get her name wrong, but I think it's Patty Dabrowski, right? And it's a beautiful exercise that requires people to just draw pictures of, you know, their current reality and their desired reality. And then, you know, we get to what it will take to get from one to the other. And people look at me like I'm a little off the wall when I ask them to do this. I said, you know, I want you to get some colored pencils and, you know, you're going to have this little coloring book thing to do. But once they allow themselves to get into it, they absolutely love it. And I have people who have, you know, made multiple copies of this thing and used it for different purposes. And they've used it with family members and all that. So it's tremendously important, and unfortunately something that we underestimate the value of.
Mm. It's allowing that aspect of ourselves to flow, isn't it?
It reminds me, I was when I ran a strategy day with a business. It was just pre-lockdown in the UK, so it would have been early March 2020, and they had their 16 senior management team involved in the day's session. And one of the first exercises we did in the morning was draw your vision. You know, where do you see the business being in 5 years' time? And, you know, everyone's a bit uncomfortable because, you know, everyone assumes that they've got to be Picasso to do this exercise. So I had my pre-drawn kind of, you know, this is my vision of the next 5 years. And it was sort of, you know, Mark Curtis aged 46 and a half written on it, you know, just to kind of give them a bit of a giggle about it as well. And what was really interesting, that they had half an hour to draw their vision of the future. And then they all stood up and presented their drawing. Yeah. And what came out was that there was so much commonality between the senior management of this business. The way they represented it was slightly different. And when they'd been trying to talk to each other about it and just use words, there was friction. They were clashing against each other. But once they'd actually got it in a pictorial form, they realized that actually it was there was a lot more commonality than what they'd realized by just using words.
Yeah.
So Brenda, alongside your coaching of leaders and really working with individuals, you then decided to add on another skill and chose to write your book, Access Denied, Addressing Workplace Disparities and Discrimination. Can we talk a bit about how, first of all, that came about and what really inspired you to embark on that project?
Yes. You know, it's interesting. I don't know that it's anything I ever planned to do, but I was inspired, or I will say moved, by the events of the spring of 2020. And not so much because it was anything particularly new or different from my vantage point, but more because of the conversations that began to emerge as a result of all of the things that happened here in the U.S., you know, during that time.
Yeah.
And what I realized was that we really had a lot more, I'll say, under the carpet than was apparent. And I was hearing that from both sides. I was starting to hear more and more from clients about things that they were experiencing, but that were in some cases that they were just pushing back and not addressing, not dealing with. And then I was also hearing from, you know, organizational leaders who just were surprised. I had no idea these things were happening and, you know, all of these things. And so, you know, I don't have a meaningful platform by any means, but I felt, to me, that was like a call to action. And I felt that I wanted to get into the conversation. I wanted to provide a resource or help in some way, primarily for the people who were experiencing disparities tied to race, to give them a tool and to help them to make different choices. And so the book is a compilation of real stories. And I told a couple of my own stories in there. But it also provides coaching tools and reflection tools, because I think that, you know, people, they have two immediate reactions or, you know, feelings when they find themselves in questionable circumstances. One, that it's only happening to them, that they've done something wrong or that they're in some way deficient or have failed. And two, that they're questioning whether or not it's real. And so I say in the introduction, one, no, you're not crazy. You know, there's probably something to what it is you're experiencing. And two, know that you're not alone and it's not just happening to you.
And what sort of reaction have you had to the book and, you know, being part of that conversation?
A lot of gratitude. People who have reached out to me and, you know, talked to me about how much some of the stories have resonated with them and they start to share their own experiences. I have people who have called me and just wept about things that have happened in their past that they were not in a position to address or deal with or didn't know how to deal with them. And what has surprised me is the response from organizations that I was not expecting. I've had a few organizations reach out and you know, request to buy the book in number for their leadership teams to read and for us to conduct conversations and things like that. Everybody, well, not everybody, but many organizations in the last 3 years now have tried to address the conversation or the issue, the subject of diversity and inclusion. And I've seen everything, as they say, from the sublime to the ridiculous. I mean, let's have somebody come in and talk for 2 hours, which really is not sufficient, to very meaningful and robust initiatives and programs to, you know, peel back and see what's there and what the opportunities are. Okay. Yeah. And so, as a result of that, we've started to work on a course, that will be available for organizational leaders to really help to identify some of the circumstances that may exist in their organizations and how to address them.
That's fascinating. So, and this course, has that come about as a result of organizations saying we need more, basically, to help us on this journey and to be able to actually do something real and sustainable?
It has. And more than just articulating that they need more, it's the blind spots. It's the profound blind spots. You know, and I think that there are people that can experience a situation or see something happening and it has no relevance to them because they don't understand that, you know, the impact on others involved. And so it's a combination of those things.
Yeah. So it's about making people aware and really exposing what it's like for other people, I guess.
On an earlier guest episode, Brenda, we had an episode which was with Abstract UK, which is a business based up in Scotland. And the two people on the podcast, it was Andy Nichols, who he was an ex-rugby Scotland international, and Sue Liebert, MBE. And they were very much talking around how they were seeing diversity was becoming a bigger issue and blind spots. And Sue was saying that actually even little things like job specs, if they're written by a certain demographic, then you're accidentally going to have stuff in there which will turn other demographics wanting to apply for jobs. So with all of this, it's very much around, you know, getting different eyes looking at things, different backgrounds, different ethnicities, whatever it might be, just to try and minimize the amount of blind spots.
Absolutely. And that's what was so, I'll say, shocking to me. I don't mean to be dramatic, but, you know, when I started to have so many different conversations, you know, especially, you know, late 2020 going into 2021, it was amazing to me how much was in plain sight that was not being seen.
Yeah.
I would speculate that many organizations thought, well, that we're, you know, that doesn't apply to us. Surely that doesn't happen here. You know, we're very culturally diverse. We're very aware. But actually, there'd be individuals in those organizations that are like, no, absolutely not. Acknowledging that and actually doing something about it is so important, isn't it? We'd be really interested to hear about your course. That sounds great.
Thank you. Stay tuned.
So in terms of the book, are you planning on writing any more? Because I imagine it's a massive investment of time and commitment and whole other thing, isn't it?
But it's time well spent. And I am thinking about a sequel or a follow-on. But I want it to be in response. This all came out of my head, you know, how to organize it, the stories to select and things like that. I was basically trying to set up a variety of archetypes for different things that happen, different things that occur. And I've had a lot of feedback and interest in telling more stories and things like that. So I think that once the course is complete and we have a few opportunities to offer the course and facilitate the course, that I'll have a little bit more data to know, you know, what a second publication might look like.
Do you think the conversation has moved on at all? Have we made progress?
Oh, well, it is too soon to say. Mm. I think that in a small number of cases, there probably has been some meaningful progress. But I also know that the conversation has been muted by so many other things that are happening. Okay. And so it's difficult to keep it top of mind. It's difficult to keep it in the forefront. And so that's the challenge. Yeah. That's the challenge for it not to be drowned out.
I can see exactly what you mean. It's really interesting. Well, Brenda, thank you. That's been a wide-ranging conversation and it's been absolutely fascinating. We always finish off our podcasts with the same couple of questions, which we did ask you beforehand, so you had time to think about this. So the first one of those is, what three books, podcasts, films, publications or something would you recommend to our listeners to really help them on their journey of continuous learning?
Well, I have one podcast and two, potentially three books, if I may add a fourth. But yes. So the podcast is called On the Balcony, and the host is a gentleman by the name of Michael Kohler. And the podcast is somewhat based, loosely based on the work of Dr. Ron Heifetz out of Harvard University on adaptive leadership. This is something that I have strong beliefs in, not just because of the name of my company, but, you know, where we are today. And it really, the adaptive leadership model makes a distinction between the types of challenges and problems that we face, the distinction between technical or core problems that we recognize, that things that we've seen before that we know how to address, and adaptive problems that are all new to us, things we've not seen before. And how do we source solutions for those things? And I would argue that much of what we're seeing today would fall into that adaptive category. Yeah. So I hope you will check that out.
Yeah, we will. Yeah, thank
and
you.
And Michael actually studied under Ron Heifetz. So he brings a lot of value to the podcast.
Excellent, thank you. And your three books, because we're going to let you have the extra one.
Yes, thank you so much. Thank you. The first book is called Leading Inclusion by Dr. Gena Cox, G-E-N-A. And it's really a roadmap when we talk about inclusion and how to achieve a meaningful level of inclusion within organizations. It really is almost a roadmap to help leaders identify these blind spots. She's much nicer than me. I kind of leave the breadcrumbs in the book, but she really goes right to the core and really lays out some meaningful models and things that leaders can do to really advance their work and the work of the organizations toward inclusion. The second book is more for individuals, and it's called Hope Leans Forward. And it's by, the author is Valerie Brown. And this is really centered on mindfulness and the things that we need to do to prepare ourselves to navigate these uncharted waters, right? So this is really more focused on self-care and how you prepare yourself to do all of these big, scary things in life, workplace and personally. And then if I could, the third book is called The Magic of Creative Thinking, and it's by a gentleman based in Israel by the name of Yarin Kimur. Yarin is a former journalist and broadcaster in Israel, and he does some amazing work around creative thinking and innovation. And I think that this is really important right now. You pair this with Michael's work on the balcony, and then you really are in a position to make traction, because creative thinking is something that's lost on so many of us. You know, we're so regimented. And so he uses some interesting tools and approaches to help you learn how to become more of a creative, innovative thinker.
Brenda, they're brilliant. You know, those three books all together would give you a really good rounded, at least, you know, a point to start, wouldn't they, in terms of those things we've been talking about today. So thank you. They sound brilliant. We'll certainly look those up. And then the second thing that we asked you was, what three pieces of advice would you give an 18-year-old Brenda?
Yeah, this was really interesting. And so the first thing I always say is, take yourself less seriously. Don't take yourself so seriously, right? You know, when I was 18, I was entering my junior year in college. Okay. And so, we won't go into all the reasons, you know, that I graduated early and all those kinds of things, but, I was, you know, always around and surrounded by people who were older than me.
Okay.
And so I was pretty serious, and I took the world and myself very seriously. And so that is always at the top of the list. The second thing would be to just be more present, to be in the moment, and to allow yourself to play and live and have a little bit more fun, right?
Yeah.
And then the third thing goes back to something we talked about earlier that Mark touched on before we started, is for me to pay attention more to my interests and my values. You know, there was a real strong creative streak for me growing up. That manifested in designing and sewing and other things. And I just couldn't figure out how to put it together. And as soon as Mobil Oil offered me a job, I closed up the sewing machine and I picked up a briefcase, right? And I feel that had I paid more attention and stayed more connected to that, I might have made different choices. I have no regrets, but you know, if I had a do-over, I would probably have spent more time exploring that space.
Wow, really interesting. Thank you. Gosh, I think that, you know, such brilliant, brilliant things that I can resonate with me, certainly, and I'm sure they do with Mark. I think the one that really, it's the second one, be present and have fun, which probably links back to the first one as well, doesn't it? Well, all three of them about just don't take yourself so seriously.
Yeah.
Especially at the age of 18.
Yeah.
Definitely. And the third one, Brenda, the, you know, pay attention to the things that you really want to do. And I can't help but, you know, I'm with you. I have no regrets. Well, I have a few maybe, but most of the time I have no regrets. But I would have taken different choices as well in my life. And it was almost, there was too much conforming with norm, whatever that might mean. And, you know, I look at the things that I really enjoy doing. I mean, we were talking about crafting earlier, and I was sharing with Becky and Lizzie before we started as well that in the UK, high school, we do GCSEs, or we certainly did when I was at school. And I've got a B in GCSE textiles. You know, I kind of, you know, I enjoyed that kind of stuff, the creative, the arty things. And I ended up going into business, which in a roundabout kind of way, as I got more senior, it came back to being more arty than it did logical, because it was then dealing with people more. But it was a roundabout route to get back to something which I found was more within my, what I would say, inverted commas, natural skill sets and natural interests. But I would definitely say, you know, don't chase the dollar or the pound. You know, definitely chase things which are going to feed the soul, not just the bank account.
I tell you, I have this conversation with clients often, those who say that they are motivated by money. I said, you're going to have days where you realize, in the worst of ways, that money is not enough, okay, to do some of the things that you're expected to do. So living your values and beliefs is so important. We could talk for a long time, it sounds like, Mark, about the structure and the conformity and, the, you know, all of this. And you know, you talk to people, my family, everybody's a doctor, everybody, and I was expected to go into medicine, and, you know, they want to go and join a band or whatever it is. So you get, it's difficult, tough choices, but we all get one life. And I don't believe that others, with all due respect to the parents out there, I don't believe that others, you know, are entitled to live vicariously through others.
Yeah, we need to find a way of transplanting the knowledge you have when you're 50 into your five-year-old self. If we could do that, it would be amazing.
Youth is wasted on the young.
Wow. Well, before we go down too dark a road.
I know. Come back up.
So anyway, thank you so much, Brenda. That was, you know, brilliant, really great answers to our questions there. And just really, it tops off a fabulous conversation, which is really so interesting for us. So thank you.
Oh, it's been my pleasure.
Loads of great learning points there. I mean, I am an advocate of coaching, as is Mark, of having a coach and supporting others on their coaching journey. So you have absolutely helped us to really reiterate that to ourselves and hopefully to our listeners as well. So thank you so much. It's been really interesting, and best of luck with the book and with any future work as well, because, you know, we'll certainly be looking out for that.
And we'll put a link to the book in, Brenda. And if people want to reach out to you, where's the best place for them to reach out to you?
A couple places. I'm on LinkedIn and I'm on Instagram. On Instagram, I'm author B. Harrington. And then my email address is bharrington@adaptiveleadershipstrategies.com.
Brilliant. We'll get those in the show notes as well. Thank you.
Brilliant.
Lovely.
So thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Yeah, thanks, Brenda. That was amazing. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, Mark, that was just a fascinating conversation, wasn't it? So much there. We got just sort of broad, wide-ranging, really. I know we say it every time, but really, really interesting. So what are our three key takeaways, do we think, that we can share with the listeners?
Yeah, thanks, Becky. Tricky to pick three out of this, isn't it? I mean, we could have 33, I think. The first one for me was the phrase Brenda used was psychological contract between employer and employer has changed. And I think the point I'm taking from that is really, you know, if, as leaders in business, one of the things we should be considering, if we're not doing it already, is really looking at the opportunities we can afford to our teams around coaching, whether it be internal, external, formal, informal, if we're not doing it, then we're missing a massive trick. Other people will be doing it. But more importantly, it can really help develop the people in our teams, which will be for the mutual benefit of the employee and the employer.
Yeah, definitely. And I think then that leads on to the point that I really, really resonated with me was about having a sense of purpose so that you understand why you do what you do. And that's both in work and in every area of your life, really, isn't it? But in terms of what you do for your work, people, I think, more so really have assessed what they want to be doing rather than maybe what they were doing previously. Is this where they want to be? And that comes back to your point about if we can really support those people on that journey with the coaching, then absolutely it'll be rewarding for both sides, won't it?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And as you say, if you know the purpose, it can really act as a roadmap on how you're going to get there, can't it? You know, as I think Brenda and I were saying at the end, maybe we might have done things differently in life, but actually maybe I wouldn't have done because I had to go through a certain point to get to another point. So actually, if you understand that, then going through the bit in between would feel very different if you knew exactly where you were heading towards. So yeah, I agree. That purpose thing is massive, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, so the third point, again, to just pick the term that Brenda used, chemistry call. So when you're trying to find a coach, the right coach, having that chemistry call to make sure that there's a connection going both ways is really important. I suspect there's going to be people listening to this today who've maybe not got a coach and they've had a coaching session and they've gone, do you know what? It just didn't work. And maybe the question we need to pose to ourselves is, why didn't it work? Is it because we just didn't find the right person to have as our coach? And I think so, yeah, that chemistry call for me would be massive in terms of us as leaders making sure we get the best fit that we can possibly find.
Yeah. And if you don't find that fit with the first call, don't give up because, you know, there will be someone that you will click with and you will feel comfortable with and be able to trust to really get the most out of that coaching relationship. So really important to think about that side of things before jumping into anything, definitely. So that's great, Mark. Thank you so much. Brilliant things that we can take away from that episode.
Thanks, Becky.
So that brings us to the end of the show. If you go to the show notes, you'll find links to all the different ways that you can find out more about Brenda, her book, and how to contact her. Thank you again to her for a fascinating conversation. And if you don't already, please follow us. If you give us a rating, then it makes others able to find us much easier on Apple or Spotify. We'd really appreciate it. And finally, thank you very much to our sponsors, Larkin Gown, who we couldn't do this without. So that just brings us to the end. We'd like to wish you all a great week. Look after yourself and boost your health, wealth, and self.